Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing Board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome once again to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. Thanks to Grassland Agro once again for helping us make this show happen. Plenty of rain knocking around during the week again. This week I'm joined by Adam Woods, Darren Carty and Aidan Brennan. Later in the show, we'll hear a chat Adam had with John O'Loughlin from Grassland Agro. First up is the quick fire round. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 086-836-6465. Adam, coming to you first on the quick fires. What is your opinion on the optimum stocking rate of a dairy beef farm? What amount of fertilizer would then be necessary? Talk to me, Adam. Dairy beef farm.
Yeah, look, it's a tough one, Jack, because I suppose it's dependent on grass growth in terms of what grass you can grow. If you're growing 6 ton, you'll have a different stocking rate maybe to grow in maybe 10 ton. You know, in terms of that's what determines maybe stocking rate and how much grass you can grow. But in general, I suppose if you look at the very top, you talk about Chagas and they're probably putting out 4 of those dairy beef animals to the hectare. I'd be safe for maybe around sort of 1.7, 1.8 livestock units to the hectare. That will be about 3 of those because they're 0.6 up to 2-year-old if you're getting them out before sort of around 2-year-old. And in terms of nitrogen on that system, you're probably talking somewhere between 80 and 100 units of nitrogen to the acre on a dairy beef system. So I'd say if you were starting at that, right, I'd go in at 2 maybe or 2.5 and then move your way up to 3 animals to the head. You know, just when you get more confident as regards growing more grass.
Okay, all comes back to grass growth. There's a second quick fire here, Adam, for you. Hi, could you ask Adam if he knows what the story is with AI bulls that have dropped to 3 stars and below? Can they be used for the SCEP scheme? I have 10 straws of a very good bull in the tank, but he has dropped to 3-star replacement and 2-star terminal. Talk to me, Adam.
But my understanding on this, but we have to get confirmation from or clarification from the Department of Agriculture on this, in relation to if you go back to the September 2023 run, that you could, if he was okay then, he'd be okay to use for now, basically, going forward. There is an AI company has printed a book this week showing that, and they're stating on that the bulls within the catalogue all qualify for SCEP based on their evaluation from 2021 onwards. So that's more confusing now in terms of that's going back to another 12 evaluations nearly between 2021 and 2023 or whatever. So we've looked for confirmation or clarification from the Department of Agriculture on that. It would get quite confusing if you're going back that far, because I know the bulls in the catalogue in question, and there may be ones down replacement and ones down terminal, and they're saying that they're eligible for skip because they were okay. That bull was okay back in 2021. So we need to get clarification on that.
Okay, I might pick that up. We might have a chat about that later on in the show. Back to you in a minute, Darren. Okay, a couple of quick questions here on schemes. Hi, all, love the show. Where is the Charter of Farmers' Rights now, given the mess with payments? Are they not meant to protect farmer rights? Talk to me, Darren. Charter of Rights. Obviously, IFA pulled out. It's a good while ago now. Brian Rush led the charge out of the Charter of Rights because of the payment mess. Talk to me, the delayed payments. Talk to me about where do you think we are now?
Yeah, sure, Jack. I think it's pretty much dead in the water, sort of, given on this. There's been no talk about them. I think that they, now I can be corrected on this, but I think that they're still looking for an independent chair first. It was rolled over from, say, the last cap to this cap, but I think the chair was changing. But I haven't heard anything of late that there has been a chair announced. And if there has, well, then they're keeping very quiet in all of this.
Okay, excellent. We might touch on that later. Hi, all acres. Delays are just the tip of the iceberg. Problems go much deeper across numerous schemes. I waited 10 months for TAMS approval and carried out the investment, but now I have no way of making a payment claim, and my advisor tells me he does not know when it will be available. TAMS approvals, Darren, that's a big issue as well.
Yeah, big issue, Jack. Like, there's as many farmers on to us on a weekly basis about TAMS, particularly farmers that have, say, want to put slurry storage in place or animal housing, and that some of those are a different cohort of farmers, maybe that's in acres. So it's every bit as pertinent an issue, so it is. And look, at something that we've talked about numerous times as well, is that that needs to be sorted. Now, there has been a significant improvement, to be fair, in the amount of approvals going out, but like it's not beyond time, so it isn't.
Similar line here. Hi, Jack. Might be more of a comment, as you and Darren have covered this on occasion. I'm still waiting for my eco scheme payment, and no one can tell me when it will be paid. Those I have talked to tell me there is no problem on my side and still can provide me no explanation as to why I'm not getting paid. It's simply not good enough. The eco scheme, a good chunk, 25% of your, I call it single farm payment, as we know, as in the old days, Darren, still guys waiting for the eco scheme payment.
Yeah, Jack, we are getting calls from say, different farmers and in cases similar to that. And I think you hit the nail on the head this week when you said that there should be a button there that you can press. If it's not the farmer's fault, if there's nothing, say, waiting in regards to paperwork, well, then there should be an interim payment paid. Like it's for farmers to be waiting for an eco scheme payment in the middle of, in the middle of February in the following year is not good enough. Like, whatever about the payment not coming, not to be getting any information around when he can get paid or why it isn't being paid isn't good enough either.
Another quite lengthy...
It's on a similar vein, Darren, in terms of he's got this I won't read it all out because it's quite long, but he's got paid part payment, and he's saying, sure, if I can get part payment, I should get 100% of the payment. And he says the IFJ keeps saying that the excuse is an IT issue within the department in terms of not being able to, but he's kind of suggesting that it must be more than an IT issue if they can pay part of it. And is it more of a financial issue?
Yeah, look, we've heard that, so we have as well. That has come into us on numerous occasions. The money here is coming from Brussels, Jack. If there was ever going to be secure money, it has been around this eco scheme, Chris. It's not as if the money has been, say, apportioned or sent over to Ireland for that. And it is, if you take the last three questions, it gets very hard for people to have, I suppose, maybe... to believe that it is IT issues, it's IT issues. But like, we are hearing cases where there's no other excuse rather than that it simply is something is blocking the system for paying it. And that's no solace to this listener. No. But it's more credible than the money not being there. And as I say, look, I don't know what other comments you can make on that one.
No, that's fine. We'll come back to it. We'll touch off it again. Thanks, Darren. Back to you in a minute. Aidan, there's a question here from a listener. I think it's a question we asked last week around the dairy beef scheme. And that the terms and conditions haven't been kind of, I'll call it, published yet. And we must have asked a question, but this farmer is saying that he breeds bulls at home, and the breeding decision for this particular bull that they're selling now was made 3 years ago. The new dairy beef scheme has been announced, but the conditions haven't been published yet, and could be another few weeks before they are. This is affecting dairy farmers. They don't know what bull requirements are buying the bull, and affecting pedigree breeders because they don't know if the bull they are selling meets the unknown requirements. It's this whole grey area or unknown area, Aidan, in terms of what is the criteria for the dairy beef scheme.
Yeah, so I suppose the change, Jack, in the new dairy beef scheme compared to the old dairy beef scheme is that it's now based on the quality of the dairy calf, and that's a result of the DBI, the dairy beef index value of the bull used on those dairy cows. So there's a minimum stars needed for that bull. Back in October 2022, the Minister for Agriculture said a 3-star bull will suffice, whether that's an AI bull or a stock bull. Now, I think this farmer's bull is 1-star cross breed. So I think the answer I had the last time was I don't think that bull will qualify, but we don't know for sure because the terms and conditions haven't been published. And I suppose, look, he brought in then, I think, the question as well, Jack, around SCEP and look, the changes that are taking place there. And I think 2-star bulls would qualify, you know. So there's, I think they're going to stay with the 3-star personally, but that's only a hunch I have. And we'd have to wait and see until the you know, and it's very late in the day now, Jack, for these. And I mean, full sympathy to the farmer in question and dairy farmers wondering, you know, what bulls they should be buying and what AI bulls they should be using because they don't know the terms and conditions.
Correct. Yeah, a lot of dairy farmers. I will come back to it in a minute. Second question. A quick fire. Question for Aidan: have paddocks that took a bit of a beating in autumn better to go with a compound fertilizer now, or go with urea and a bit of slurry? Talk to me, Aidan.
Yeah. So I suppose the thing to remember there, Jack, is that slurry is compound fertilizer. There's P, N, P, and K in it. In my view, it's early enough yet to be going with compound fertilizer. April is probably time enough. Late March, early April is probably time enough. So I would go with urea now, and then I'd go with either slurry or 18-6-12 later on. Of course, a lot of farmers go with slurry early because they kind of have to. But I mean, the value in the slurry is more for later in the year because it's the P and K element to it.
Mm. Okay, go with the urea is the answer. Excellent. Thanks for that, Aidan. Back to you in a minute. Adam, and all the talk of beef price rising, and here we are seeing a bit of a pullback of all things.
Yeah, they've sort of moved to cool it, Jack, a wee bit. I suppose, you know, some of the naysayers out there would say it's a great way of seeing what cattle are out there in terms of if you apply some pressure, then will some people panic sell them, and will you get more cattle into the net?
Is there any basis for it?
I'd be fully critical of factories, Jack, and fully critical of lack of transparency. But if we look to the tracker, Europe has probably slowed a little bit in the last 2 weeks. UK is still marching on, like up another penny there last week in terms of price, and that differential is still huge in terms of 50, 60 cent. But probably European price has maybe. Maybe just cooled off a wee bit, and if we look at the tracker there, we've probably evened up. We were way behind on the tracker, and I suppose that's I use that tracker to see where markets are going in terms of composite beef price index. And
now,
we're even up there.
A lot of our beef is going to the UK.
It is. We'll say I think it's 55%, and then there's another whatever 40% going to Europe. So it traditionally has been half and half. So it shouldn't be taking a huge dent out of it. I can't see it, Jack, in terms of coming back anymore. And plus, I said that the headline was factories move to cool trade. They've talked it. They're talking it down. A lot of them have quoted less this week, but are paying the same as last week. So in terms of money paid, and if we look at the ABG, which is the definitive, I suppose, of beef price on the back pages of the journal this week. Your steers are at 542, the same as last week, and your heifers are at 547, the same as last week. So it's the same money has been paid.
The real numbers, as you say, that we publish there every week in terms of what actually has been paid in factories is showing the same money being paid. Okay, March trade, Adam, is it still flying?
Yeah, because it's still flying. I say cold cows maybe back a wee bit. A couple of big operators in the West maybe ease back a little bit over the weekend. And that's probably back to factories maybe a little bit cooler as well for quotes. But in general, weanlands are on fire. A big exporter in the Northeast starting to buy again for North Africa job and a Middle Eastern job. Looking for bulls sort of between 300 and 800 kilos. So there's a vast array of bulls within that. Frisians, Continentals, Angus, and even bullocks in there as well. So they're really lighting up the trade. And I suppose probably the highlight of the trade this week is those runners, Jack, in terms of those Angus and Hereford weanlings now coming out, we'll say, out of a shed in terms of, you know, maybe 300 kilos. They were probably bought maybe at 600, 650 back last October. They're up closer 800, 900 at the moment, which is a mad price for that sort of stock. But we're coming into grass time. We're coming into, you know, big cattle buying time. So I don't really see that one going one direction, and that's up.
Good to hear you're buying for grass there up in the northwest. Middle of February, Valentine's Day, and they're buying for grass. Like, yeah, I'd say they're going well up there.
come here, I'm only missing. Tullamore, I see you have an article there this week in the journal on the Tullamore Bulls, and this question of take the money and run now, or invest 600 or 700 euros more cost into these animals to finish them in July. Hey, you're sitting on the fence. You didn't call it like yet.
No, we're looking for some views. I suppose from our readers in terms of what the advice is.
Looking for a price from someone, I'd say more likely. Like, is it? Yeah.
We're still reeling from the wrong decision we made last year. We done the same budget last February, and we looked at everything and we thought, geez, we'll go on and finish here, but that was the wrong decision to make, and we would have lost money on our bulls last year by doing that. If we had to take the weaning price that we were getting in February, it would have been a lot better. And look, it's very simple for anybody to do 450 kilos at €3 a kilo, and probably we're not over egging it at €3 a kilo. Sean was in a couple of marts this week just keeping an eye on trade, and he was saying maybe we'd be over that €3 a kilo, but it's always good maybe there a little bit lower than that. That brings our bull in at 1350, and if we add on the meal, which would be 1.3 tonne, is €450, straw, processing, haulage, fixed cost, labour, everything in there. Basically, when you add on the costs onto that 1350, if beef price held where it's at the moment, and I put the bull in at 541, which is the base price, I think, of 520 or 25 on another 16-month bull, and he grades a U-, there's €33 in it. To do all that. So we're investing, I think it's in the article, I think it's 28,000 in costs to make 1300 over the next sort of 3 months, which doesn't really make sense. But
it's easy to make that decision, like, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, you lose one bull and the whole job is gone, you know. So I think, and look at it, it's a change. We've 6 years bulls data down there. Sean loves the bulls, you know, in terms of finishing, in terms of seeing them bulls perform, and we've made great comparisons over those 6 years regards where we're going. Carcass weight has been steady around 385, fat cover good at 3, U grade, U minus or plus. But I think this year we may opt to sell. I think I'm going that way, but obviously.
Adam, have you the weight? Have you the weight? Like, if they, yeah, are they, are,
yeah, well, we're, you know, sort of, we're sort of between maybe 420 and 470, I'd say, there at the moment. So you have those big bull finishers, and those feedlots are hungry for those at the moment, and we might try and capitalise on that. And look, they're in a better position anyway, Jack, to get a contract. We went to the processor, and they said, look, we don't issue contracts to bulls, and these famous words, we look after you whenever you come to us in June. But that we could have a different definition of looking after us compared to them.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, it's a big risk to take when the upside is small or negligible, Adam, isn't it? Now, but in fairness, like, you've been trying to, like, you know, it's the last 6 years, in fairness.
There was a strategic decision not to get involved in trading, wasn't
there? No, like,
to kind of follow through on the bulls.
Like, absolutely. And it sort of takes it's very transparent for everybody in terms of you're going one route with them and you're not hitting a bad day at a sale. But I just think the way the market is at the moment, we can't ignore that. And we can't stare down the face of another 200 ahead loss in 2024 as a result of keeping on those bulls. Like, I used a quote, I think, in the article, fool me once, it's my fault, but fool me twice, you fool me once, it's your fault. Fool me twice, and it's my fault. So you don't make the same mistake twice.
No. So, Adam, I leave you. Overall, like, I mean, you're confident that the, you know, in terms of guys selling cattle. Sorry, now I'm back to normal everyday job. You're selling cattle the next couple of weeks. That it's not going to, the price isn't going to stay going down. There's no basis for that.
We always get a lift. We look at MarPiz data. We always get a lift in March and April on grass. You have the exporters out there very, very active, and they are adding to that in that weanland trade. So I can't see that. And finished cattle is going to be tight. You're going to be down another 40,000, 50,000. 5,000. So I, yeah, that's...
And come here, last one, sorry. The stakeholder job in terms of the Skep piece and the whole piece around the genetic evaluation, nothing new on that this week.
No, they're back around the table next Thursday. I suppose there is a bit of talk around cow weight and stuff, and I think ICBF is definitely looking at it. I think ICBF is going to come next Thursday with something to the table on cow weight, which is a positive, because that seemed to be one of the biggest issues at last Thursday 2 weeks ago meeting. So I'd imagine something is going to come on that cow weight next Thursday.
Excellent. Thanks, Adam. Chat to you. We'll hear you had a chat with John O'Loughlin. We'll hear that there later on the show. Thanks for that. Darren, the Acres money is on the way. Can we say it? Can we say that?
Well, we can, Jack. Hopefully. There's been a good few false dawns, but I think the pressure has reached boiling point, I think, this week. And good to see, look at it, there has at least been a resolution on it. Yes, we can pick holes in it, and there is plenty of, I suppose, maybe we could talk for a long time around why it didn't come and everything. But at the end of the day, there's 4,000 coming to participants in the general interviews, and 5,000 in the cooperation interviews, and that's going to come by the end of the month. And that is a vital cash boost to this time of the year for farmers. So we have to recognise it as it is said like that.
Ah, yeah, it is what it is. But I mean, they're owed it too, Darren, isn't it? It's only fair that they get, you know what I mean? It's not as if it's a kind of a bonus or an early payment, right? I mean, like, there's 26,000 farmers hanging with their tongue out, hanging for this, like, yeah?
Exactly, Jack. Like it has been one of the, you'd say this, it has been one of the longest drawn out, I'd say, maybe payments in this. There has been so many false dawns. There's been so many reports. And like, if we think back even to the way Acres was viewed at the very beginning of when it was launched, like it was launched about three or four times. All the government was in launching it. It was seen as the flagship for Ireland's environmental ambition, for Ireland's green ambition. Every word that you could talk about was sort of, I suppose, maybe topped up with it. Yeah. And for to come to, I suppose, maybe this shows this came definitely the full circle in that it is now come to an interim payment. And that has its own, I suppose, maybe complications in this. There'll be, the farmers still don't know what they're going to get paid. They still don't know how the fields have scored. So like, while it's good that the payment is coming, there still is, as I say, like there's so many other questions. Like there's so many questions that maybe farmers have to try and influence, say, their scores for next year and that sort of information coming back to them. And that's something that, like, I'd say, look, the payment is coming now, but the pressure can't be relieved. That sort of information has to come to farmers. The information about how much they're due to get paid, that needs to come soon. Like the top-up payment is going to be in June. There will be farmers as well that are going to get paid too much now, and that there will be money clawed back at some stage. I presume it's going to be clawed back later on in the year when BIS payments come or when next year's Acres payments come. But like that sort of information and transparency is needed as well now.
Yeah. Golly, and like, I mean, all this started from the piece around taking in the 46,000 farmers, Darren, isn't it? In fairness, you know, in terms of, like, the minister came out, there was 30,000 places allocated for tranche one, and then it went up to 46 because the demand was there. But there's still, Darren, there's still a lot of farmers in terms of the second tranche of Acres. Is it 4,000 places now, and there's 9,000 applications. So like those farmers are a long way from money if they ever get in.
Yeah, they're a long way, Jack, and from what I hear is that the pressure is sort of building as well, and that there has to be movement on actually seeing who's going to be given the green light to get in, because there's a lot of talk around BIS applications opening, and BIS can't open until that information is on the maps, unless you do a situation like you did last year, that if we think back to this time last year, and there was a lot of pressure building on BIS as well, and the department made a decision that at the end of the day, that they allowed some maps to go out with the Acres information, and they said others would be updated as the system is updated. And we could see a similar scenario to that, because I'd imagine that we'd see BIS applications coming before the end of the month, because we'll be reverting back to our earlier closing date or our normal closing date of mid-May, whereas last year it was the end of May. So I'd say that you'd be seeing pressure coming to get BIS maps and BIS applications out before the end of the month.
Okay, so excellent. I mean, look, long story short, that's it. There's a stopgap payment on the way to the 26,000 farmers, 4 and 5, depending on what scheme you're in. And it'll be balanced up, as you say, maybe later on in the year in terms of at the single farm payment time, we'll call it, or maybe, as you say, maybe at the next acres run. Darren, sheep game, quotes up 30 cents, heading for over €7 a kilo. Happy days, like.
Yeah, and well over 7 now, Jack. It's and like the way a farmer said to me this week, he said, Ginny, he said, you need to be either going to the market or reading, say, online update. And even at that, the rate of prices have increased this week. We had a 20 cent of an increase. We 10 cent per store over the weekend on Sunday, 10 cent in on Monday, and then Kildare Chilling added another 10 cent on Thursday. So it's the way the trade has moved. You have to be keeping abreast of it. Very good to see. Kildare's price now at 7.10 plus 10 set a new benchmark, I suppose, for quality assured sheep, because it wasn't not all plants followed suit. So there's a couple of things I think that needs to be, I suppose, acknowledged here is the importance of Kildare Chilling as an independent plant. This is something we've talked about before, but like when you see this week and see what they can do and the way that they lead prices, you can see why farmers were disappointed that the CCPC gave the green light for it to be purchased. Now, look, I'm not going to draw up and spend a long time talking about that, but it just...
Hopefully it'll still continue.
It just marks, the importance of them in driving competition and in driving prices. Like, at the top end of the market, prices have now gone anywhere from 7.25 to 7.40 a kilo. So the trade has moved on nicely. The mart is a good option for farmers that can't negotiate. So if we look at, say, the spread in prices there, I talked about Kildare 7.10 plus 10 and 7.20. There's still some factories opening quotes or trying to open quotes less than 7 and trying to buy lambs maybe at 7.10 a kilo. A lot more going than that, but some farmers that have lower negotiation power or maybe non-quality short lambs aren't getting that offer. And for me, Jack, they need to be looking seriously at the mart trade. Yes, it mightn't suit everyone, but that's a decision then you can make, knowing all the information or knowing what prices lambs are at. And we're getting a lot of calls, Jack, on is the price rise going to continue? And look, I don't, that'd be pure crystal ball gazing, because I don't think at the start of this week, we would have expected the prices would have moved on 30 cents. Now, we talked on last week's show that the mart trade had gone ahead of the factory trade, that there was higher prices being paid than what was being quoted. So I think some of the movement this week has only just balanced up that differential and brought it into, maybe into reality what is being paid. The only thing that you can look at as of whether you think prices are going to go ahead is that are going to move on again is Ramadan is coming at the start of March. So there will be, sheep are going to be wanted, Jack, in the next few weeks. And that's the reality is that numbers are fairly tight. Yes, this price-wise, I would suspect this price-wise will attract out some more sheep onto the market. But I'd say any sheep that come are going to be well-wanted.
Mm. Darren, I was just thinking there as you talked, and we talked on the cattle side a lot in terms of feedlots and kind of factories knowing what cattle are coming at them, you know what I mean? Because they have some handle on it one way or another, you know? In terms of producer groups, and how they operate. Are they effectively, do the producer groups always go direct to the factory, or do they play around in March if what's the ground rules there in some producer groups
good
question. The majority, Jack, are direct to the factory. Definitely there is some, really tight producer groups, and you have to go direct to the factory. That's one of the rules in the producer group. But they're finding and have been finding it harder and harder to operate or to keep farmers numbers from going to the market. If we look at, you mentioned the beef side there.
Yeah.
There is a perception that a sort of feedlot or a specialist finisher, that they're getting an extra touch and that they're getting maybe payment over and above the market.
Yeah.
That might be the case in the beef side because a lot of them work on maybe the average base grade plus a top up on top of that. The big issue on the sheep producer groups, and it's something that has come up numerous times and has come up more than ever over the last 3 weeks, is that they work off the average of say quotes. So you can take, right, just say the Tullamore group that the Farmers Journal trades through. It's the average of groups across a number of factories, and then a top-up bonus. It's 30 cent if you're R-grade lambs, 40 cent if you're U-grade lamb.
Okay.
The difficulty or the challenge is that when factories keep the base sort, say, I suppose, maybe unrealistically low is the only way you can term it, or keep it artificially low.
That's not really a bonus.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
So you and that has been something that some producer groups, before this week's increase in price, I know at the end of last week, some producer groups just resisted and said they're not going to send the lambs until the price comes into a realistic area where they're actually getting a premium that they're not sending any more lambs. And they were dead right to do it. They were because like their say premium was essentially eroded. And, some people often say to me when I talk about, say, the price that Sean gets in Tullamore, but that's, it doesn't take into account that if we have an overweight or overfat or underflesh lamb, there is serious cuts, like anywhere up to your kilo of a cut. So it's all right to get the price on one side, but you have to be, it's very demanding on the specification on the other side. So you do need a premium if you're going to be delivering week in, week out to that tight specification. Well, then you do need it. And I think that that premium was eroded by artificially lower quotes. And thankfully, this week, the quotes have come somewhere into line as of what the market rate is.
And again, Darren, ignorance, producer groups, how do they work? Is there one or two bodies steering the group that they make the key decisions in terms of, listen, yeah, we're going this week, we need 500 lambs or whatever, and do it, like, is how does it operate? Like, who makes the key decisions in the producer groups?
Yeah, so generally there is a producer group coordinator who I'd say 80 to 90% of the time walks away in his own or her own. And they sort of have a bit of leverage. They've been elected as that group person. But in weeks like the last 2 weeks where a decision comes on not to hold lambs or a decision comes, there's a wider committee. So the coordinator is talking to maybe the chair of the group, the secretary of the group, or there's a wider sort of committee that makes that call. Yeah. Because it is quite a big call. Because
It is.
Some members of the groups may be in a position where they need to trade lambs or need to... but like it's a call the whole group makes together. So that's generally the way it operates.
Okay.
Darren, there's a nice piece there on Lamb Plus. Maybe just give us a little bit of context in terms of what Lamb Plus is and why the significant increase in flocks that are being registered through the Lamb Plus piece.
Yeah, so Lamb Plus is, say, Sheep Ireland's performance recording, say, system. So Sheep Ireland are the brother or sister, say, company to ICBF that looks after sheep breeding in the country. Why Lamb Plus is important is that for lambs to get Eurostar evaluations or for sheep to get Eurostar evaluations, they have to be recorded through Lamb Plus. So that's, say, birth rates being recorded, parentage, 40-day weights, weaning weights. Okay. There's numerous different weights. And the more weights, say, or the more... performance records you have, the higher your data quality index, which is a measure of how much record you have. But essentially, what has been driving us in recent years is the inclusion of the genotype ram action in the sheep improvement scheme. So a lowland farmer will have to buy a ram 4 or 5 star, a genotype 4 or 5 star. Hill sheep farmers will have to buy a DNA sire verified ram. And what we've seen is last year there was another 2022 to 2023, there was 350 more flocks into it. For 2024, there's another 108 flocks, or 8% up. And we're now at a level of 1,460 flocks, which is good, Jack. Like you have quite a percentage now of pedigree flocks that are operating or recording through Sheep Ireland's Lamb Plus program. And that to me is good. Look at
more information.
Exactly. More accuracy, more genetic links, all that side of things.
Okay, 100%. Darren, just on the road, I see that, like, there's plenty of the early lambs, I call them, and yours out. Like, there's in small bundles, I'd say, here and there, like, it's fair to say.
Yeah, Ginny, they were looking miserable now, Jack, this week, so there was a last of humped in under it. You wouldn't see too many, but no, there is. Yeah. They're starting to creep out now. February lamb and flocks are starting to big you would have noticed it big time this week. I thought that whereas last week you would have said, was there any flocks at all early lambing? There has been a significant, I suppose, maybe increase. And look, at weather is challenging for those, Jack. I think feeding is the big thing, to get feeding right, and a lot of those flocks are you know, it's not easy, but they're feeding concentrates for a few weeks until at least sheep get settled. I think that's half the battle, is if you have a lamb with a full belly, it can go a long way to try and withstand the elements at the moment.
Absolutely. There's a big sheep man down our country there. He's down south tip, you know, but he has two electric wires was keeping his sheep in. Now he'd a lot of sheep, and the sheep would never be outside the bounds, you know, the kind of way, but he had two electric wires, but he's had to change his policy now because there's people coming in from the outside. So he's gone to five electric wires, and he's getting electrifying the gates, all to keep people out and to keep dogs out, Darren, like from young lambs and yours, you know. It's amazing how the thing changes, you know. But like dogs are deadly at this time, you know, for young lambs like that, aren't they? Like they
soul destroying, Jack. Like you put in so much work into it, keeping animals alive, you put in so much an investment, and then it can all be undone in a couple of hours. Like,
absolutely. 100%. Thanks, Darren. We'll talk to you next week. Aidan, Darren is talking about a stopgap payment. You're talking about a backstop to the derogation.
Yeah, Jack, I suppose something needs to be done. Like, we can't have a situation where we're facing a crash out from derogation at the end of 2025. And
there's nothing there at the moment. It's on the cards, I'd say.
Well, sure, this is my point, yeah. Like, it's and you know, we're hearing about water, we need to, you know, take actions to improve water quality, and really, for me, they're really trite comments, because just like, what can we do, what can farmers do now that's going to improve water quality by 1 milligram of N per liter between now, you know, and 2022 figures, the last figures we have, and the 2024 figures, which would be the last figures we'd be dealing with when it comes to the derogation renewal. We know that in the Timonee catchment in Cork, the figures for 2023 and the agricultural catchments program are higher than the 15-year average. So they're going the wrong way in 2023. And 2023 would be the second year of a big reduction in chemical nitrogen use. So we've had a 30% reduction in chemical nitrogen use at the same time that nitrate levels have gone up. And for me, that just reinstates the fact of the matter, which Chagas are stating publicly, but doesn't seem to be picked up by policymakers, that weather has a huge impact on nitrate levels. And in these free draining soils, there's you know, it's always going to be higher levels of nitrate, and farming activity, while it adds to it, you know, it's not the sole cause of it.
I know, and no, the frustration comes through, and essentially your point is that, like, we need, like, farmers and farming, and you know, it's not just dairy farm, but it needs a long run in it, or it needs a plan. It needs a kind of a 6, 8, 10 year kind of a time frame to kind of to make this happen. Like,
yeah, and if it doesn't work, I mean, 8 to 10 years for me is sufficient, right? If water quality doesn't improve in 8 or 10 years because of changes we make in agriculture, then, you know, I'm happy to see the dirt. I shouldn't say I'm happy, but, you know, we have to accept that we then need to look at other measures, and the stocking rate could be one of those we look at. So you'd have to accept at that point. But I mean, the risk to everyone's businesses, to dairy farmers' businesses, and I don't say that lightly, is massive if the derogation goes. I've said it in the show before, it's not just farmers and derogation that are going to be affected by this. I mean, if all the co-ops are going to be under financial pressure to cope with losing the derogation, that's going to have an impact on milk price. So there's no comfort for anyone, no matter what part of the spectrum they're in terms of stocking rate.
It's a nice point in terms of, if the co-ops that have the capacity now in terms of processing, if they don't have the milk to put through that processing capacity, it's going to cost them more to do that, and hence they get the farmer ultimately gets a lower price. Like, that's your co-op point.
And I mean, they're going to shut down plants, or there's going to be job losses. So that's inevitable. Yeah. I mean, the co-op people are saying that. Like, so
your crunch point is that, listen, if a farmer, he or she, needs extra slurry storage, and all of a sudden they're looking at a situation here now in 2024 where they're stocked at 220 and they're looking 2 years down the line and saying, shapers, I could be at 200 in 2 years' time. Why would I bother putting up the slurry storage to manage my nutrients better? You know, and that's what you're saying is that you need to give clarity. You need to give some kind of a signal that, listen, where you're going to be in 2 or 3 or 4 years' time is
where it's going to be. You know, that's
and if those dairy farmers are, and it's not just for, this is for all farmers now. You know, this isn't just an issue. The slurry storage is not just an issue for derogation farmers, but they're the ones, I suppose, that have less certainty over their future. But if those farmers that are currently saying, I need the slurry storage, are spreading slurry in the close period, that's contributing to the deterioration in water quality, and we're more likely to lose derogation as a result of that. So there's a really kind of a catch-22 situation here for the industry, in the sense that they really do need clarity. Otherwise, we're definitely going to lose it. And I mean, I suppose I was reflecting back in the article in the paper, Jack, on what happened, I suppose, since 2022, when March 2022, when we heard that the derogation was granted. Shortly afterwards, then we heard of, well, there's a midterm review here and we may not keep the derogation. And there was 2 years there where there was a kind of a phony war going on between farm orgs, politicians talking to different sides of their mouth, and we gained nothing. So we now have 2 years before, more or less 2 years before, and the clock is ticking, obviously, the next major review in terms of the Nitrous Action Programme and the derogation. We need leadership here from government, from farm organisations, from individual farmers to stand up and say, this current cycle of 2 years is just wrong. It's wrong from a scientific level. It's wrong from a business planning level. The European Union needs to work for its members. Here we have an island nation, temperate climate, growing lots of grass, reliant on a dairy industry for rural Ireland. And, there's a risk now that we're going to lose this. If this derogation is cut or lost any further. And, we are different and we need to show that we're different. And look, I mean, in that period of 8 or 10 years, if we can't prove that we can improve water quality, then, as I said earlier on, but give us the opportunity to do it. And a lot of this goes back to probably poor leadership in the past, Jack, as well, in the sense that environmental stuff was brushed under the carpet. It was seen as a win if an environmental measure wasn't introduced. But now it's really coming back to bite us now, because our businesses are a threat.
And ultimately then this whole piece comes back to the European Commission and Brussels, Aidan, as you say, you have a line in the piece that ultimately they think that stocking rate has a large impact on this water quality piece, and that's the handle or that's the lever they have to try and ratchet down. You contest that and I contest that. That stocking rate is the lever that improves or disimproves water quality.
Yeah, it has a very minor impact. It does have an impact, and the Chagas nitrate studies would have shown that it does have an impact. But there are other measures that have a far greater impact at reducing nitrate levels than just stocking rate. The reason I say that they obviously believe the stocking rate is the factor, because they've cut the stocking rate. We were at 250, now we're down to 220, and the threat is hanging over us of going to cut that further again. I suppose it has a disproportionate impact on Irish farmers than dairy farmers in any other part of Europe, because they're not as reliant on a grazing system, which ensures that cows have to be at grass. I keep my cows in for 365 days of the year, I'll have loads of slurry. I can export that slurry to tillage farmers. I can still grow whatever crops I need in my own farm. It's not really an impact.
But Aidan, so, I mean, surely our people over there representing us sold that to the European officials. And if they didn't understand it 2 years ago, what's the chances of them understanding it when they go back to them again?
So do they need to be hearing it louder? You know, was there enough political pressure put on them? And was it too little too late? So I suppose the decision was made in March 2022 when granting the Nitrous Action Programme and the derogation, that the midterm review was put in place. And it was agreed and accepted by the Irish Parliament at that point. It was put into Irish law anyway. We then have, you're then asking the Commission to change something that was already in place. We're now asking them to change the policy for future decisions that are being made. So it's for me, it's very different. And I mean, if the political will was there among Irish politicians and if they fully understood this, and some of them do, but not all of them do, Jack. And we're likely to have You know, we're going to have a change in the MEPs this year. There could be a change of government. You know, there's a lot of change happening, and I just you just wish and hope that the issue around the derogation won't be lost in all of that change, and that the politicians will, because I think it's political for me. You know, we have people of good faith negotiating from the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Housing, and maybe they got the kick in the backside that you know, from the last time the derogation was the change was accepted, and maybe they didn't fully understand the implications of it. But the implications of a further cut are far greater than the initial cut from 250 to 220. Just the ramifications are huge for the industry, and the impact on water quality would be negligible, Jack. Because, I mean, as we said before, if you're an appropriate stocked farm, 2.5 cows a hectare, you know, and you're managing your nutrients well, it has very little impact on water quality.
Good. Okay, good job. And there's a nice piece there. Declan has a piece in terms of the 2024 changes for those in derogation in what I think you mentioned it here before. There's something like 40 new measures since 2018 that farmers have to adhere to try and improve water quality. And Declan has a piece on the 2024 changes in the paper this week.
Yeah, that's what I was promised. Farmers are asking what's new, what's different. And I suppose it's there for farmers to see what's happening this year. Still a lot of uncertainty, Jack, as well around that, because we don't yet know what the excretion rate figures are going to be for calves. We don't yet know what the excretion rate is for dairy cows that are fed low protein concentrates. So there's, you know, and we won't know them until April, Ted Massey said last week. At April, you know, it's too late for your nutrient management plans, which are included as part of the nitrates derogation application. So
what's holding up that? Jesus.
It's going for public consultation now. I mean, this is sitting at the minister's desk for the last 3 to 4 weeks. This came back after Christmas. I mean, there was a meeting of the nitrates or the Agriculture Water Quality Working Group, which is made up of the farm orgs and Chagas and scientists and EPA and all that. And they had a meeting early January, and their conclusions were made at that point. And, you know, it's with the minister's desk. Then it went to National Parks and Wildlife Service for their comments, and then it's going to go to public consultation for a couple of weeks, and it won't be decided until the end of April. And I mean, there's uncertainty whether we're going to have any change at all for 2024 at this rate, which will have a big impact for farmers that are currently exceeding the 220 and maybe don't have land lined up, and small changes here and there in terms of excretion rates for calves and excretion rates for dairy cows could have an impact. Again, it's back to leadership, and you know, there's probably a bit of a vacuum there.
Talk to me in general calving stories, Aidan, and what you're hearing. Like, I'm hearing, I was just talking to two guys at random there now, and they were just talking about the impact that sex semen is having on their farms, in terms of one actually had a lot more beef in his calf sheds now, as in dairy beef, you know, beef bred calves, and the other had too many Friesian heifer calves, you know, kind of way, because he hit a good hit on his sex semen and had continued to use dairy sex semen, like, you know. So in general, what's the house calving going? Any kind of, I know it's only anecdotal and you're only hearing stories.
Anecdotal, seems to be going well. I was talking to a vet during the week, and he's saying very busy at calvings and very busy at milk fevers. So milk fevers and hard calvings are the key ones. I suppose you are going to get a bit more hard calvings, Jack, with the dairy beef. That's one thing, you know, your percentages are probably double compared to the dairy. Still moderate, you know, but it's important for the heifers to use easy calving bulls, and particularly it's an AI bull, really, Jack, if you're using beef, like, because there's more variability. It's a proven AI bull with beef on heifers. It's an Angus or Hereford, and it does, you know, it's nothing else. I suppose back to the questioner there in the quickfire, you know, a stock bull using them on heifers is tricky, Jack, you know, and it's you're taking a lot of risk, even if it's on paper low, just because the reliability of them is poor. But milk fevers are an issue, I suppose, particularly where you've got fat cows and cows are in good condition this year, so it's more likely to be a problem. Magnesium pre-calving is a key step there in the prevention of milk fever, either the dusting on the silage or into the water.
Are guys still doing the dusting on the silage? They are pre-calving.
And the flakes. And silage of flakes in and a small bit of it will be big help. And it just, it's magnesium, I talked to another person during the week, Jack, magnesium, even for people, you know, it's a very important mineral in terms of general health, and it gets the whole thing working.
Yeah.
So that's an important one. I suppose grazing, Jack, is one of the issues I have. Like there's the weather has been poor, right? And
you
have to accept that. Is it any worse than normal?
Makes now, exactly. Yeah. Time of the year, like, yeah. But yes, I was reading your piece now. You called out the industry and you said you're giving up, guys. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? You're gone lazy. You have your big sheds now and you have your feed face and you lead them inside.
Yeah. I think there's an element to that.
Yeah.
Compared to 7, 8, 10 years ago. And look, the numbers are bigger, people are busier, there's more calves to be born, there's more calves to be fed. But I mean, the only tool, Jack, we have in our box to lower our cost of production is early grazing, is grass. We're going to make use of grass at the shoulders of the year. And there is an element that we're going to keep them in and we're going to wait till the weather picks up. People, you're not going to get a dry week in February with no rain. It happened last year.
It did.
I don't know, did people not even make full use of it either? Like the target is 30% of the farm graze in February. That's the target. I mean, I'd say a fraction of people will achieve that this year. And and look, it's not easy. I'm not saying it's easy. And
yeah, no,
really
I know.
When I talk about this, because it's the wetland, and I mean that's 100%
fine for you.
It's just not possible. But you know, about 30% of the land in Ireland is considered heavy, and even among some of those heavy farms, and there are pockets of land that maybe could be grazed early.
Yeah.
Look, I mean that's it's all farm specific, I suppose.
Yeah.
And look, it's just that time of the year where there's a lot going on. There's a bit of night work going on and all that kind of stuff. And guys are in bad form and tired and all that. But Aidan, once a day milking in February, is there many still on that train? Or, you know, what's the kind of...
is, I'd say. Yeah, I still hear a lot of farmers doing it. I suppose from now on, they're probably thinking to go back twice a day when milk starts going, you know, if you start having in early February, milk goes back into the tank. You probably go twice a day from that period. So maybe the first week or 10 days, they're once a day. Some farmers, you know, of course, you can go at it for longer. Some farmers do that. It depends on the situation, I suppose. It is a huge labor saving. But then again, there's the flip side of it is, you know, when you get into a routine of twice a day milk, it's actually not that bad either, I suppose. And some of your heifers get trained a bit faster. And I suppose it depends on the weather and general circumstances. But having the evening off the calf cows is a big help, I suppose, rather than face into that. And the other side of it is, I suppose, you might want a bit of warm milk in the evening as well for more calves to feed. It's there for you. So there's a couple of little things in it, but
there is.
No, definitely that they're still doing it. Yeah.
I'll leave you on this now. Calves, I just see the table in the journal there in terms of the calf prices. Like that's the actual prices that are calves are trading for through marts, you know. So it's split there in terms of the bull calves and the heifer calves. I mean, the colored calves, the Angus Herefords that you're talking about, the bull calves are making kind of give or take, you know, especially I call it the older calves. I think there's less and less of the younger calves, Aidan, going through marts, but the older calves, 20 days plus, I call them, are making kind of 250, 300, it looks like from the table, and the Frisians making 70, 80, something like that, in terms of the numbers. Like, so, like, I mean, I call that's relatively a positive start. It's early days, obviously.
Yeah, it's a good start. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a good start. I suppose for those, like, that's an early calf now. So if you're calving now, what are those calves going to be in 3 weeks' time? You know, so it'll probably, you know, there'll be a big flush of calves then. So it'll be lower, you'd expect. And for me, that's, I don't have an issue with that. Like, there's a big cost to that early calf, you know, in terms of the cow and production and feeding that cow on silage and meal. So it's still doesn't pay, you know. You're better off calving in February rather than calving at the end of January or middle of January, I should say, in order to hope to get a big, you know, 300 or 400 euro for a calf. It still doesn't pay, like, because that cow now is hitting peak production at the end of March probably, and more than likely she's still going to be in on silage, or if you get a wet week she'll be in anyway. So it's from, you know, it just doesn't it doesn't add up. Like, you're better off to calve a little bit later, okay, take a hit in your main calf price, but it's you have a more profitable overall system.
Yeah, super job, Aidan. Thanks for that. Chat to you next week, folks. Earlier I said Adam had a chat with John O'Loughlin from Grassland Agro. Let's have a listen.
Okay, folks, delighted to be joined by John O'Loughlin from Grassland Agro. John, it's been a really wet week up here in the Northwest. And I don't know, is it similar across the country? Like, ground conditions aren't good up here again. We did get a little window there to put out story last week, but it's back to a quagmire again. In terms of slurry, I suppose there's a letter on the paper this week and there's a lot of talk around, you know, maybe new tighter regulations and maybe a licensing system for contractors to spread the slurry. Like, I have my own personal opinion, maybe in terms of looking at the rules that we have. And we know rules are being flouted in every county, and there's probably a few contractors and a few farmers in every county flouting the rules all winter. Do we just need to be a little bit harder on those as regards, you know, enforcing the rules that we have there if we want a future of being able to spread when we want to spread?
Yeah. I think you're right, Adam. I think it's a culture thing, you know, and it needs to become like drink driving, you know. Yeah. So back in the day, you'd hear the older generation say, you know, you go down to and have a few pints and you drive home. Whereas in my generation, like, that's completely alien, and it needs to be the same with slurry spreading in the closed period. Like, it has to be the exact same, blowing stuff over a ditch with a rain gun. Like, that's just unacceptable now. And it's unacceptable because we're also passionate about agriculture and the livestock sector. And this is just creating such a poor reflection. The couple of bad incidences, you see your Twitter there, it'll be absolutely thronged full of, you know, comments and retweets when someone puts up a video, like there was the infamous one in Clare last year. Like, that stuff, we just can't do it. Like, we just cannot do it. Like, we all kind of think it's like, we're pulling a stroke or a wink and a nudge, and, you know, actually we'd be grand, we got away with it, and the department are off Christmas week, and, you know, this kind of stuff. But, like, in reality, we're only shooting ourselves in the foot, we're only fooling ourselves. And I think it's the culture. I think it has to be farmer driven. There's no point me or you saying, but in a discussion group or at the co-op, or a neighbour has to say, you know, hey, come on, like, will you cop on a little bit and stop what you're at, like, because from a fertiliser point of view, it's the most valuable fertiliser that you have on your farm. You know, we get lots of rows over a fiver or a tenner or a ton, but, like, if people are wasting this valuable resource on their farm, it just doesn't make sense. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I agree. And like, I suppose I'm looking too in terms of derogation. Like, people think derogation is a dairy problem, but I see suckler farmers in the south now really under pressure to rent land because derogation is forcing them out of rented farms. The economics just isn't stacking up for beef farmers. It's that pressure has been applied to beef farmers. And I shudder to think about what could happen if it went from 220 to 170. And then in the back of your head is water quality, and is water quality going to improve? And maybe you're looking around, you're driving, you know, through the country in the first week of January, and you're smelling slurry and you're saying, gee, this isn't gonna change here. Water quality isn't gonna get better here if we're still doing these practices, and that's gonna have a knock-on effect of coming back to 170. That's huge pain and possibly a decimation of an industry in terms of the future, you know. So we need to be very careful.
Yeah. And like, I was at the tillage conference, and they're very vocal about maybe the dairy person taking the land. But, like, it's gonna be the exact same for the dry stock sector. You know, it's gonna be the exact same. Like, it's not going to be possible to compete with the big prices that are being quoted. And that's a shame, because, like, there's some unbelievable dry stock and beef farmers and suckler farmers in Cork, in Wexford, in Waterford, in Kilkenny, in Tipperary. Like, do you know, like, and we need all of those. It can't just be a west of Ireland where they think we have bad land and you can flute away with a few cattle. Like, we need a proper dry stock industry, a proper suckler herd. We need a proper avenue for decent quality dairy bred calves as well, to rear them as well, you know. So it's going to have a massive knock-on effect. That's a personal opinion, but it's all of our responsibility, not just in the dairy, kind of the strong dairy areas, but everywhere across the country, to not be doing anything stupid with slurry and potentially risking water quality disimprovement.
No, it's a good point. If me and you were in charge, we'd have it all sorted in the morning. I'll move on to soil temperatures. Couple of calls from the south this week. Maybe drier ground and maybe, you know, maybe a bit milder conditions. Obviously, grass starts to grow earlier in the south. But as regards you know, looking to fertilizer, and in terms of, look, it's still very expensive. We talked about the value of slurry, but in terms of, is there a Is there a fail safe there as regards if you look at a wee thermometer, it's probably what 10, 20 euros maybe for a wee soil thermometer? Like, what are we looking at there? It used to be maybe what consistently above 5 or 6 degrees for a number of days. Yeah. But what's the gauge there, or what are we looking at?
6 degrees and rising is what you're looking for, Adam. Now, it's very, very mild there today, this week. It is damp. I suppose ground conditions are touch and go, but I do often pass the Greenfields farm. They've cows out nearly every day so far since the early days of February. Like, so that's probably the most extreme dry. There is farmers getting through their spring rotation plan. I think you're right, Slurry is very valuable, very useful, but like, you need to prioritise that to your low P and K ground and to your silage crops. So like, actually going with a bit of chemical fertiliser will work out more economical. So the fertiliser of choice would probably be urea or protected urea. And going with a small quantity there, because we've gone completely, you know, someone said to me, a farmer in the discussion group said to me, you'd nearly be worried to say that you were spreading nitrogen nowadays in February, like, because there is such a kind of a shift towards reduced nitrogen in the right. But like, all the noise I'm getting out of Chagas is that grass growth has suffered really significantly. Now, part of that is nitrogen and reductions in nitrogen without maybe clover or silage health there to make up the deficit. A lot of it is PK and sulfur and lime as well. But like, we do need to rethink our strategy on nitrogen. Spring nitrogen was always really important, and that hasn't changed. So going with a targeted quantity, a lower quantity maybe than normal. We used to just say a half a bag, but in reality, we went with maybe 15 or 20 kilos, slightly less than half a bag, and target where we have decent soil temperatures, where we have a good sward. That is your most valuable grass that you're going to grow at.
I was on another webinar this week with the Footprints Farmer, the program that the Farmers Journal run, and there was a question there around really low K indexes on some grazing ground and some silage ground, but the farmer was going to go in maybe with 0730, but I was sort of saying, and I'd be interested to get your view on this, need to be careful there around sort of front loading K on in the springtime with cows, maybe in terms of grazing, that it can lock up magnesium, and you can have incidents of tetany there as regards loading that up in the early in the spring, can't you?
You can have tetany and you can have milk fever, but if you think of what we've done in the last 2 years, Adam, right? So every farmer, instead of spreading nitrogen for the last 2 years, has spread 2,000 gallons of thick slurry, which in reality is about 64 or 5 units a K. So like, the bag of MOP, I often get calls, everyone's like, jeepers, oh no, I couldn't go with a full bag of MOP, which is 50 units.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Like, your 2,500 gallons of thick slurry is going to be way over that. So I'd say, yeah, there is a risk, but that will really, you'll really suffer by not having your K out with a lower nitrogen kind of future. So I would definitely be encouraging to try and sort your K, maybe split it up a little bit if there was a risk there from tetany.
Yeah.
A suckler cow is amazing. She can get tetany any time of the year. So maybe supplement with mag. And then from a milk fever point of view, you're trying to get out maybe your slurry and not exceed kind of a ratio of one unit of nitrogen for one unit of potash when you're closing up, Adam, would be my advice in that instance.
Okay, good tips there. Just finally, John, I suppose new technologies and new, we'll say, science coming to the fertilizer industry, and there's new compound products there, urea-based compound products, something that we've never had before. So if you wanted a compound before this, I guess it was a can-based product. But now, just explain to me what changes have occurred there and how maybe farmers can use it.
Yeah, no, I suppose NBPT is something that we've heard an awful lot about, Adam, and there's over 20 trials done by Chagas alone on NBPT. So it's really tried and tested technology. Previously, it wasn't possible to incorporate that into a blend with DAP because the acidity of the DAP would break down the NBPT. What has come to light, come across our desk, it's nearly 2 years ago now, was a company from New Zealand that had... instead of a dissolved NBPT where you spray it on, they had one that was based in a water-based solution, and they added a buffer to stop the acidity breaking it down. We said, fantastic, brilliant. Go ahead and do some work. Go ahead and do some trials on it and come back to us with that. So they went away and they did trials with the University of Lincoln in New Zealand with that, but different ratios up to 50%, which is a very high rate, and came back, and the NBPT was still effective, and the NBPT wasn't degrading in the bag. So then we took it on, I suppose, the start of last year. And what we were able to do is we were able to look at the degradation So we're able to look at the degradation of these compounds, which was really, really positive. There was no issues there, how they stacked, how they stored. And we're delighted this year to launch three products, Pro 18s, which is an 18-6-12 with sulfur, Pro 24s, 24-2.5-10 with sulfur, and Pro 27s, which is 27-2.5-5 with sulfur. And the emission savings. So like we're talking about reducing the national herd because of emissions. The emission savings on these compounds is about 50%. And we're looking at the fertilizer market. You're looking there, Adam, that our market is very unique in the fact that we use a lot of compounds. And those compounds make up around 50% of the market. And we can take out 50% of the emission factor. Like, this is a massive positive story for the industry. I suppose the way we've worked it is we've engaged with, you know, the subject matter experts in Chagas and the department as well. So it's bringing everyone on the journey, I suppose. It's new, it's in its infancy. Previously, something wasn't able to be done. Now it is. It's the NBPT, I suppose, is the key point of differentiation in the inhibitor. That's the one that's tried and tested in Irish conditions. And we're really, really proud, I suppose, to have it on the market, because the challenge was laid down to the fertilizer industry to say, go on away there, lads, and come up with something. And we have something now, and we're seeing fairly positive uptake already, and hopefully we'll be able to drive on.
So this product, can this product be used? Can it be used on any farm? It's not specific farm circumstances or anything. It's basically it's a standard enough product that you've developed. Yeah.
Yeah, 500 kilo bags as well, Adam. So like, if you're going in, you can get an 18s, or you can get a 24s, or you can get a 27s. I suppose the benefits for the farmer, they're guiding maybe a 10 or a ton under the can based alternatives. And you'd also be getting your sulfur for luck as well. So like there's value there. The spread, we did spreading test, no issue spreading. They store, the NBP won't degrade. And like it's a really positive story. And you know, the stuff is pink as well, so it's quite unique. So one of our colleagues there in the McDonald's requested that was pink. He was inspired by Barbie there last year, so he was we decided we'd give him his turn on that one. So listen, it's a real good news story, and there's a massive thing here. Like, when you think about it, all of us in the farming industry and in the farmers on their farms feel under pressure because of emissions and targets, and like, we have a really positive story here that we can go out and say we can displace the nitrate, which is in the can, which is the real bad egg in relation to emissions. And now we can drive on with a protected urea, based alternative, which is really, really positive.
Okay, John, look, that's a really positive story, and I'm sure we'll hear more about it as we come into the spring and as the fertilizer spreading season kicks into action. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks to John O'Loughlin and Adam for that. Right, folks, that's it for another week. Thanks to Grassland Agro for helping us make this show happen. Thanks to you for watching, and thanks for listening. Thanks to our contributors, Adam, Darren and Aidan. Thanks again to you for the questions. Any more questions, WhatsApp 0868366465. Remember, you can listen back to any of the webinars or podcasts on ifj.ie/podcast. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and safe farming.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.